Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I am finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you doing? Welcome to season two of the Finally Pregnant podcast. Well, I know it's been a few more months than I had anticipated since we finished off the last series. In fact, confession, there was the last episode that I haven't recorded. Well, I did record it once, but I didn't finish it. And that is my birth story. But I promise that I will get that done and include it in this series. It just was taking a lot longer than I thought it would. And I just really struggled to fit it in. But I promise, for reasons that I will go into, you know, I have a bit more time on my hands and I will get that done for those of you who are asking. So what has been keeping me busy? Well, Ren basically has been keeping me very, very busy. Quick update, she's almost 7 months old. I can't believe it. I know people say time flies, but it really, really does. We've just had our first Christmas together. It was so lovely. Although I fear that people put a lot of expectation on a lot of the firsts, especially, I suspect, after going through so much to have our little ones. So I will say that Christmas wasn't perfect, because nothing is perfect, nothing's out of a movie scene, but it was ours and she was there. And from my perspective, and I know lots of you will feel like this, and I hate saying this for those of you who are still trying, but it was really nice not to feel sad at Christmas, although there was still quite a hangover, to be honest, about previous Christmases, really, and that really sad feeling that came with them. So that hasn't left at all. But I really tried to prioritise the fact that she was here and enjoy that as much as possible. The highlight, I've got to say, was going to see Father Christmas. And I hadn't really thought about that particularly. I went with my sisters and lots of Ren's cousins, and Bob came along as well. We got the photo, the obligatory picture. Ren wasn't very impressed. She didn't cry. She just kind of looked at him as if to say, who the hell are you? We walked out of the little, you know, his little grotto thing, and I promptly burst into tears. Oh my goodness. I couldn't have imagined it. And I know, because I've chatted to some of you, that you've done exactly the same thing. And yeah, I was just completely overwhelmed that we were there, that actually Ren was here. And we had taken our child to see Father Christmas. I genuinely never thought that was going to happen. And that does happen, like, for different experiences, whether it be a class, whether it be just walking down the street sometimes, pushing the pushchair. You know, I do still feel overwhelmed with emotion, like positive emotion and joy that she's here. It's just incredible. And hopefully lots and lots of you, if you're not already parenting, you are kind of, you know, not far away from that, or if you're not yet pregnant, that will happen really, really soon, and you will totally know where I'm coming from and understand that for yourselves as well. I will no doubt talk about things that have been going on with each episode as I record them. But if you want to know more about what's going on with Ren, please do head over to my Instagram at Trying Years, where I share as I go along. And I will be trying to do more and more of that as I've got a bit more time these days. But to get you up to speed, Ren is now sitting up on her own. That was a bit of a shocker. Didn't expect that. Just put her down in a class one day. I was right behind her, about to kneel down behind her, and I just realised that I didn't need to support her. It was incredible, and I had to hold back the tears the whole way through that class. But anyway, I am a bit of an emotional wreck these days. She started eating. We're doing baby-led weaning. She's in a room of her own, which happened only a couple of days ago, and so far so good. And she also has her first tooth, which, yeah, like, wasn't a surprise when I look back on the sleep or lack thereof in the week preceding it. But yeah, it was kind of like, oh, she's got a tooth. The first 6 months have been tough, really tough, but she really is my favourite thing in the whole world, and I simply adore her and wouldn't change a thing. But now I'm getting back to work a little bit, which means that she's starting nursery, and I can't tell you how much I've ummed and ahed about this. after having tried for so long to have a baby. I am at about 7 months putting her into nursery, and I just think, really? But we've spent a lot of money over the years, and we're in a, you know, a financial deficit because of all the infertility, and I need to start earning money. I really do. So it's only a few hours a week, and I'm hoping it will be a good balance for all of us, really. So we're just going to play it by ear and see how it goes. Oh, anyway, I will move on. As is clear from everything I've just said, pretty much, I am now in the finally parenting stage of this journey. And while this podcast will remain about the pregnancy stage, like that's what it's called, I know that lots of you are also interested to hear about the parenting bit too. And that might be because you're preparing yourself for what's to come, in which case I commend you because I definitely didn't do enough of that. It might be that you are also now parenting and you've got your little one with you and you want to stick with me, something that I'm incredibly grateful for. And to that end, I will be including some parenting chat in some of the episodes too, which I really hope that you'll enjoy. But there will, I promise, still be predominantly pregnancy stuff. I love to hear from you and I'd love to hear your views on that. So if you want to DM me on Instagram or over at Twitter at Trying Years, it's the same on both. I'm not on Twitter as much, but if you DM me, then I will absolutely respond. Or you can send me an email to cat@catstrawbridge.com. All of this information will be in the show notes. And let me know what you think of the episodes. Give me some ideas about what you want to hear about. Please also subscribe, follow and review the podcast wherever you listen to it, because that's really, really important. I'm just going to make a comment for all of my episodes right now, just because I know that some people really think that sound quality is important, which it obviously is. I record all of my interviews at the moment via video call because I just can't get out and about as much as I used to be able to. So sometimes the signal isn't quite as strong. 9 times out of 10, it's perfect and it's great. But there are moments in some of the interviews where it just drops out. Now, I try and cover that up as much as possible, so hopefully you won't notice. But I just want to let you know that here and there, every now and again, there is a bit of that. And the reason for that is because I can't, like I say, leave the house as easily as I once used to. And so it was all done in the evenings on video calls. So yeah, bear with me. Hopefully that will change. And if you want to sponsor me so that I can do that and I can travel more easily and more affordably and meet with people face to face to record, Please do get in touch. I'm really delighted that I have got a couple of sponsors for a couple of the episodes, and I'll also be giving away an LV pelvic floor trainer, which I'm using it and it is really good. It's one of those things where I need a little bit of a nudge and it's really helped me with that. I'm going to be talking about the pelvic floor in one of the episodes, and I'm going to be covering lots of different things, which I'm really excited about because I've recorded lots of the interviews already. I'll be covering pregnancies like today with Hannah, also surrogacy pregnancies. And what's exciting for me with that right now is I know a few of you are pregnant via surrogate, which is just incredible. So I'm really excited to bring that episode out in the next few weeks. And also surprise second pregnancies, you know, when you're just in the initial throes of parenting your first miracle pregnancy. So lots and lots of chat to come. For now, though, I'm going to hand you over to a chat I had with my wonderful friend, Hannah Vaughan Jones, who, after multiple rounds of fertility treatment across several years, which included chemical pregnancies and miscarriage, was 35 weeks pregnant when we spoke. And yeah, it was just so great to have a chat with her. It really was. And I can't tell you, and I say this in the interview, how excited I was to hear that she was pregnant. And she did send me the picture of her little one. Spoiler alert, if you follow her, you know that her and Lewis welcomed their gorgeous son Sunny into the world on the 10th of December. And she did, as she promised, she did send me that picture of the three of them. And I am really excited to be getting together with them soon, I hope, really, really soon, and meeting Sunny and Sunny meeting Ren, which would just be so special. But yeah, so I'm going to hand you over to the chat we had a few weeks ago and let me know what you think. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hi there, Hannah. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, darling. I'm fine. Yes, I'm fine. I'm tired and achy and all of those things, but generally in good spirits.
Oh, so good to hear. I'm so excited, genuinely, that we're having this conversation. So we met just over 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And both of us you had just been in the Times, hadn't you, with Lewis?
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of coming out, so to speak, about your fertility journey. And then we caught up for a coffee and kind of have been through a couple of rounds each. Well, you more than a couple of rounds for you since.
I remember it so clearly, actually, because you rocked up at my door and I think we'd spoken on the phone and messaged each other, but we'd never actually met before.
No.
And so you were the first sort of real-life person that I met. You walked up to the door with a gorgeous bunch of flowers and then we just chatting away about all, you know, our both respective journeys, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I think we both had a bit of a cry as well in the kitchen.
Probably.
And really, it was really gorgeous and cathartic just to kind of suddenly go, it's not just that at the time I had hundreds and hundreds of messages from people responding to the Times article that I'd written, but you know, you don't often think that they're actually real people.
Yeah,
just messages from the ether coming at you. So it was your, yes, you were my first TTC community friend.
Ah, thanks. And I remember that Lewis had come home from, was it acupuncture? He had had an acupuncture session that day. And I think it was his first one. And he was still dubious, somewhat.
He's a classic cynic, yes. He still is, to be honest. I have to say, I had acupuncture yesterday. And it was the first time in ages, actually the first time throughout the whole pregnancy and for quite a long time before that I'd been for another session. This is going to be jumping ahead quite a bit, but just to say that I recently found out that my blood pressure was too high, and so the doctors were getting a bit worried about that. So I went to see Emma Cannon, who's just gorgeous and wonderful, and she did just a half an hour acupuncture session on me, and my blood pressure came down straight away.
Really?
So even though Lewis has always been a skeptic about acupuncture and any of these kind of like, you know, additional therapies that you can do, I am increasingly of the belief that that if you find something that works for you, then stick with it, because it's amazing what the body responds to.
Yeah, I agree. That's so true. I always have this like kind of theory with it that, and you know, that's a direct result of something physical that you can see, which is a test. But I always think that if it works for you and it makes you feel stronger, kind of, and some of that might be emotionally, some of that might be physically, it depends what you're doing and how it works for you, but then you can, you're just in a better situation to face things. Like, it's not going to get you pregnant necessarily, but it just makes you more capable of dealing with stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just the placebo effect can be really powerful, and there's nothing wrong with rolling with that at all. So, you know, even if, who knows, in my case, maybe acupuncture itself isn't the thing that made my blood pressure come down, but I think it calmed me down and de-stressed me, and I had a lovely little sleep for sort of 20-25 minutes. Mm-hmm. and it definitely had some effect. It might not have caused it, but there was definitely a correlation. And feeling better since, which I have in the last 24 hours, I felt much better.
That's super. That is amazing. So like you say, we're jumping ahead. So if we go back to a couple of years ago, I guess, and before that, now I hate saying this and I say this every time, but just thinking that this is about your pregnancy, but in order to get to your pregnancy, you went through so much. But if you could kind of just give us a, you know, a brief, that's the word I hate, but you know, a explanation of your TTC journey. How did you get here?
So we've been trying to have a family for 6 years now. Started off trying naturally, as most people do, probably about a couple of years before we actually got married. And I was probably 32 years old at the time of sort of starting to try. Nothing was happening, and quickly realised that we were going to need IVF for a whole multitude of reasons, because problems on Lewis's side, my husband, and also with me as well. So I have a bicornuate uterus, which means it's sort of slightly heart-shaped, which is very cute but quite annoying. and also a couple of other problems as well, like potential polycystic ovaries without the syndrome. So I haven't had the, luckily haven't had the side effects, but I have the kind, I still have polycystic ovaries. So with all of those problems known, we went straight into IVF just after we got married, and ended up doing 10 fresh cycles of eggs, of stimulation and egg collection, and a further 5 frozen transfers on top of that. So 15 treatments in total. Some of them, that's not necessarily 15 transfers, because we had some rounds where either no embryos were created, or no embryos, none of the embryos made it to 3 days or 5 days or whatever it would be. Other times when embryos were created, but we had PGS genetic screening done, and it turned out that pretty much everything that we were creating was abnormal or substandard. It sounds awful in some way. And then we'd, so sort of fast forward, and this is a very brief history of it all, but fast forward to beginning part of this year, and we had emotionally moved on to the idea of donor conception, of double donor. Because for us, and I know it's different for everyone, but we kind of felt that we were going to have a family no matter what, but it needed to be 100% us or 100% not us, in a way. Mm-hmm. So just going for like egg donation or sperm donation wasn't really an option for us, but you know, obviously it is for others, and that's wonderful. So we booked a clinic in Barcelona, we'd spoken to a doctor, we were all good to go and create our family of Spanish beauties. And we still had 2 embryos from a cycle back in this time last year, last November 2018. So 2 embryos that had been screened or had been sent for genetic screening, but they were considered too poor quality to even test. So they hadn't, the results have just been inconclusive because they hadn't been tested. So we assumed that these sort of low grade, untested embryos were doomed to fail. And having had so much sort of failure in the past as well, we just put them back, transferred them back into me without any expectations at all. And with a really positive outlook of thinking we're going to Barcelona and we're going to have our family. And just completely bizarrely and wonderfully and overwhelmingly, one of them stuck. And I'm now nearly 35 weeks.
Oh, honestly. It gives me goosebumps, you saying it. It really does. I can't tell you how pleased I am, how excited, like, honestly, I remember you saying, actually, you talking about, you know, you having a family. I do remember you saying when I came round to your house that time that you were going to have a family, that you were going to be a mum, and you didn't care what that looked like or how it happened. And I truly did believe you. The way you said it, that was what was going to happen. And the fact that you're, almost 35 weeks pregnant now, and you know, kind of with your own embryo, like it doesn't matter, it really doesn't. It is whatever, you know, the makeup is. But just the fact that you're 35 weeks pregnant is just blows my mind.
It blows mine as well. He's wriggling away at me at the moment, and it's what I've always wanted. And I think anytime anything, you know, bad or sad or depressing or difficult or anything like that is going on now, you know, Lewis always says to me, he goes, this is what you've always wanted. This is what we've always wanted. And it's not to say that you have to be pregnant and giddy and, you know, gleeful all the time, because obviously it's okay to complain.
Yeah.
But it is really amazing. Every time I think about it, I just look down at my belly and I just think, I cannot believe that we got here and that I'm going to meet you soon. I just can't. Can't wait.
I know. Gosh. And am I right in thinking you're having a boy?
Yeah.
I saw that the other day and I was like, oh, do I know this? This is, oh.
We found out really early on, actually, because we, because of the history, we wanted to do all of the possible genetic screening that you can do pregnancy. So we did the kind of the, whatever the NHS tests are called, and then we did the Harmony tests as well. And with that, with the Harmony test, at least, you can find out the sex at 12 weeks, I guess, 10 to 12 weeks. And so they said to us, do you want to know? And we were like, yes, we've had more than enough surprises and unknowns over the last 6-7 years, so yes, we absolutely want to know.
And then
it was wonderful, and it was quite strange, actually, because lots of people, when we started telling, initially we just told family, and we had one reaction which was like from Lewis's side of the family, and it was just like, oh, all my dreams have come true. And I looked at her and I said, what would you have said if we'd said we're having a girl?
What did she say?
Well, it was just like, oh, no, it's just so wonderful. But it's funny, isn't it? How, I mean, all we ever wanted was just a healthy human. No, sort of like preference either way, really. But it's just funny how for other people, because they've dreamed of this scenario for us for so long as well. That they obviously, I don't know, I guess this one person in particular had this vision of Lewis with his son. And then they're going to get that now.
isn't it funny how people say, I knew you were having a boy. I had that all the time. I knew you were having a girl. I'm like, well, it's a 50-50 chance, isn't it? So, you know, did you really know, or was it just a good guess?
I think you can probably maybe, you know, there's all those old wives' tales about the size or the shape of your bump or something. In the really early weeks, I mean, you know, you might not be showing that much. I mean, I actually was showing from quite an early point, but not to the extent, obviously, that I am now. So I don't think you can really tell. I mean, you just look a bit fat to start off with, don't you?
Exactly. But no, you're right. I think the people say, like, I don't know which way around it is, but with one you carry a lot wider, whereas the other one you carry a lot kind of forward. But yeah. Clearly, I've not paid much attention to that because I don't know which one's which.
I've got a boy on board, and I'm definitely carrying forward out. So sideways, and it's quite extraordinary. But it's fine.
It's good. So in your journey, you have been pregnant before, haven't you?
Yeah, we had... I always forget which round it was now, but sort of round seven or eight, I was pregnant, and we sadly had a miscarriage. We found out at 10 weeks, and I think it had happened at, the heartbeat had stopped at probably 7 or 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that was actually after the round of treatment that we documented on YouTube as an IVF diary. So it was difficult. It was perhaps even more difficult in a way, because it felt like we'd come so far and shared this story with whoever wanted to watch these videos. And we had the joy of suddenly getting the positive test result, which was so unheard of for us anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone, especially those people who aren't in the sort of like the TTC community, people just assumed as soon as you get a positive pregnancy test, then that's it. You're good as gold. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I knew that this was just the first hurdle. So I think I was happy for about 5 minutes, and then I was utterly terrified. And sadly, you know, that came to be true, that pregnancy wasn't meant to last. And we actually had the genetic testing done on the, I think they call it the products of pregnancy or something awful like that.
Horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
And it showed that there was a trisomy 15, I think it was, which is quite a rare chromosomal disorder. So the baby would not have made it. You know, in a way, I suppose it was a blessing that I'd miscarried that early, rather than it continuing on and it being any more heartache and pain for both us and for the baby as well. So yeah, so that was very difficult. But that was my only other pregnancy, and even the only other time I'd had a positive test result had been what they call a chemical pregnancy. So it had shown up to be positive, but very low pregnancy hormone in my blood, and which had quickly dropped. By the next day, it dropped down to practically nothing. So this is really, as far as I'm concerned, my only experience of being pregnant. And honestly, I've got to tell you, Kat, it's just, I feel like an expert in all things infertility. Mm-hmm. I am such a novice at being pregnant. I have not got a clue what to do. Like from one day to the next, one week to the next. It's just been a massive, massive, massive learning curve, and one that I've loved. And obviously I've loved being on this path, but it's utterly terrifying as well. I don't know if you felt the same when you with Ren, but I didn't realize how difficult being pregnant would be.
So if you would, like, I totally agree, but if you would, like, talk us through that. What have you found difficult? Is it because, do you think, of the fertility? Is it because of, you know, previous losses? Or is it just because being pregnant has just been really hard for you, kind of possibly yourself physically, etc.?
It's mostly for me, being pregnant has not been difficult at all physically until now. I'm just, you know, because I'm waddling now and everything. But generally, I've been keeping up with exercise and haven't had to stop doing too much. I think you're always told that beforehand. You said, oh, you know, people say your first trimester, you might feel a bit sick. Second, you'll have a burst of energy for a couple of weeks and then that will peter off. And then third one, that's when you're kind of like, you know, the baby might start to engage, the head might engage and all this sort of stuff. So you kind of are aware of the physical implications, but I don't think people talk about the mental side effects of pregnancy. And that's what hit me for six. I've been very lucky that up until now, I've never really suffered any mental health problems or anything like that. But I've also always been very conscious of the fact that, you know, I have, you know, good friends and people who suffer from anxiety and things. So I know a bit about it in secondhand kind of way. And I think it's just, I basically sailed through first trimester in that I was just completely in disbelief that I was pregnant. And so I didn't even recognize if I did have those usual physical symptoms of feeling sick or being overtired or anything like that, because I just ignored it and wouldn't allow myself to register it. Mm-hmm. Second trimester, I had loads of energy, actually. I felt great. And I suppose it was the summer as well, so I was kind of on holiday and that was all good and work was going well. And then I hit about 24, 25 weeks, so just, you know, just before going into the last stint. And I just, like, the world collapsed in one day. It was really weird, and I don't know why, and nothing happened. There was no trigger at all. But I think I went from being pregnant to suddenly being, to thinking I'm pregnant, to suddenly thinking I'm going to have a baby. And it all just hit me. Mm-hmm. And worked so hard to try and get pregnant, I hadn't really envisaged having a baby. And I remember you saying to me, actually, at that first meeting that we had when you were at my house, you said that someone had advised you to try to visualize your baby.
Yeah.
And I'd done that before. And I don't think I'd ever done that. I did that since, actually. But I just remember you saying it because this came into my head when I was going through this kind of like breakdown. I just suddenly thought, oh my God, like, this is going to completely change our life, our lives. Am I going to be any good? I felt like I suddenly couldn't do anything successfully or well enough. So even brushing my teeth was just like, this is just not good enough. I can't, it's not working. Just simple tasks became these massive mountains to climb. And it was just something that I had to work through, and it didn't last for long. And it wasn't like it wasn't like I was sort of, you know, fallen on the floor and a mess or anything, but I just mentally really needed to regroup and take stock of everything and make a plan, I suppose. Just suddenly go, right, okay, start sorting out the nursery, start sorting out our affairs, just everything, just get everything, get a plan in place, mm-hmm. because you're about to have a little human and you don't know, you've never done that before. So you don't know, Hannah, you don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to do this. You don't know how to raise another person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just all very overwhelming.
I bet. I almost think, well, it's a good thing. Like, I know it probably didn't feel it at the time, but I guess it is a good thing, because I think a lot of us, we look down, you know, and even literally, once you've got the bump, you look down and you don't look forward and ahead at what is actually going to happen. You're just concentrating on the now. And it's, you know, when we're trying and we're going through treatment, whatever that is, you know, we're just looking for the pregnancy test, you know, and then you get pregnant and you're just getting through every single day and every single week and scan.
Right.
And we need to look forward. You know, I had Ren. Well, my big thing, actually, I was like, the birth, I was really like absolutely shit scared about that. I really was, because it's almost a bit of an impending doom. You know, this baby's going to get out of there, but yeah. You've heard all the stories and you don't quite know how it's going to go because it's so different for everyone. And yeah, so that was my hurdle, really, rather than thinking about having a baby. And, you know, I either didn't think about it or I was less, not worried, but I thought it'll be fine. But the birth was a bit for me. But I think that that's great that you had that moment to regroup and think about it. And then you could, now you probably have kind of imagined what that's going to be. And that's helped put some things in place.
And my mother-in-law was great, actually. She put it into perspective in a really kind of analytical way, which helped. And she said, I think you've had so much perceived failure over the last however many years that you only, as soon as you have any kind of setback now, it immediately takes you back to that feeling of a failed test result or a failed round of treatment. And so even though it's not actually a failure that you're experiencing now, it's just, you know, someone, I got to the point where I thought that if people didn't shower me with utter praise and admiration, it was a negative and I was being criticized.
Right.
There was no middle ground. And so I ended up kind of like snapping at Lewis or snapping at my mum or snapping at whoever it was, because I was just like, well, I can't believe I'm being criticized for this. I'm being told I'm rubbish at something. And it wasn't actually that at all. I was just catastrophizing in my head. And any kind of negative or perceived negative on my part took me straight back to a feeling of failure that I hadn't really processed properly, you know, that I'd had all for all of those years. And I think that's one of the things. We did a lot of back-to-back rounds. We sort of crammed in quite a lot in 6 years of those. And at the time, that was absolutely the right decision for both of us, especially for me, I think, because I'm very impatient and I just wanted to get on with it. I didn't want to have any breaks and pauses between rounds of treatment. But I think the knock-on effect of that is that I didn't really take enough time at the time to consider my mental health. And it's all sort of started to catch up on me a bit now or through the pregnancy, because, you know, we had 6 years of, it sounds really glib saying this, but we had 6 years of just having one problem, and albeit a big one, but, it was just a problem that was quite concentrated and almost like, and contained, manageable in a way, because it was, you know, the two of us knew exactly where we stood. This was the process of just trying to get pregnant. And now it's suddenly like, we don't have that problem anymore, but it feels like, oh my God, we've got billions of other problems, because we've just ignored them for the last 5 or 6 years. And suddenly you go, I need to paint the whole house from top to bottom. I just haven't done anything for the last 5 years. Try and get pregnant. I think being pregnant has been wonderful. And physically, I think, you know, I would certainly say, and I think people who have seen me through it would say that I've coped really well with it physically. But it's the surprise to me has been how much of a challenge it's been mentally to get myself over infertility and into motherhood.
And I don't want to tell you that this is going to be the case for you, because it might not be, but I think it does carry with you into motherhood, to be honest. And people that I've spoken to who have got kind of 12-year-olds and things say that it's affected them long into the motherhood. But that doesn't mean to say that we can't be processing it and dealing with it at the same time. Like it tends to hit me in a positive way, but in an emotional way. Like I'll take Ren to, we go to a class called Monkey Music. And sometimes when they dim the lights and, you know, the music's on, because it's really musical, obviously, by the name. And it, you know, I can be there and I can be welling up, you know, just looking at her, just thinking, oh my God, like she, like just thinking about it, it just makes me, I just can't believe it. I really can't. And it's still, yeah, it is still with me. And I suspect it will go on, you know, it will always be with me, really. Maybe
yeah,
not.
I think it will always, that will always be the same for me as well. I mean, I have a vision in my head of what he looks like, mm-hmm. what he's going to look like. And I just, I know I'm just going to be obsessed with him for, you know, just staring at him for the first goodness knows however long, yeah. but and take my eyes off him. I'm nervous about being an overly cautious and scared mum. I don't want to be that mum who's really kind of, you know, afraid of failure, afraid of letting my son down, letting my baby down. Mm. But I'm sure that's there, and that will probably stay with me for a long time until I've figured out how to keep a human alive. Which was my first question, by the way, in the antenatal classes that we go to. They were like, any just sort of general questions? I was like, how do you keep a human alive? Everyone else was just like, oh yeah, I want to know a bit about breastfeeding. I was like, no, just keeping them alive. I just want to know what you do. So yes, I think there'll always be an infertility hangover that will just linger probably forever, like you said.
Yeah, it might not be as strong all the way through, but you will do it, and you will absolutely do it. It just happens. You know, like if you speak to anyone, I'm sure you've spoken to friends with little ones, you just take every day. It's the same with the birth. You just take every moment as it comes, and it happens. And then next thing you know, they're 5 months old and and older, and you're thinking, oh my goodness, how is this happening?
I think that we had lots of people have said to us, like doctors as well, and midwives, have said, well, have you got a birth plan? And I was just like, no, I mean, the birth plan is just to have a baby that's healthy. That would be great. And then, you know, you get closer and closer to actually, you know, your due date. And you do have to come up with some kind of a plan. And our plan at the moment, because of, you know, a hangover from infertility and my, you know, my bits all being in slightly the wrong place as well and slightly the wrong shape, is that it's almost certain that I'll end up having a cesarean. Okay. And lots of people have kind of not suggested it to me, but have asked me whether I feel uncomfortable about that, given the fact that everything's been so artificial, if you like, up until this point. So I guess maybe there's some research that's been done to show that a lot of IVF women prefer or would like to at least go through natural labour, because there's something natural then in the process. Mm-hmm. But weirdly, I've never been that bothered about that. I mean, I'm definitely not in the kind of too posh to push camp, and I've got a really high pain threshold, which I know now through all of the infertility. But it was just, for me, it was just a case of like, whatever is the healthiest, safest way of bringing this little lad into the world, mm-hmm. then that's what I want to do. So we've kind of, having not had a birth plan, we've kind of now talked to the doctors about it, and this seems like the most sensible approach for us. But I can understand why, having thought about it a lot, I can understand why a lot of women might really, really, really want to just go through labor, because you feel like you've earned it more or something like that, or this is the final part of a really long process that you actually just want to deliver your baby in the way that it's normally done, I suppose. But I think it's something like one in four are born now from cesarean, via cesarean section. So that's probably going to be the way that this little one comes into the world.
Yeah, well, like you say, as long as they get here, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if there is research out there. I was having a conversation recently with Shima, who's 1 in 7, very similar, but about breastfeeding and about whether or not there is, a higher rate of breastfeeding, or at least, you know, trying to breastfeed from infertility births, really. I don't know what the answer is, but for the same reasons that you feel like it's natural. Trust me, you don't feel like it's natural when you're trying. It's just fucking hard. but you know, the perceived natural element of it.
I do really want to try. And again, not because I feel any particular kind of like I owe it to myself or to my child to do that, given the fact that everything we've gone through with infertility, but I just want to try because I want to try. But you know, at the same time, if it's not possible, or if it doesn't work, or I'm fully on board with the whole kind of like fed is best. And I wouldn't by any stretch of the imagination try and sort of push through with breastfeeding if the baby just wasn't responding to it and wasn't getting enough food. So yeah, we'll cross that bridge, but it's very much on my mind. I've been reading lots about breastfeeding and thinking, oh my God, and I've been given so much nipple cream from friends.
It's good, because if it does work, I didn't use mine a lot at the beginning. And just recently, I was like, hang on a minute, I thought we had this down now, but I've had to crack out the balm. So hold on, you use it for a while. If you carry on doing it, you know, then you'll need it. You'll go through a few tubes.
It's so funny, and some of them have been delivered with like ribbons around them as well. They're kind of like half used tubes. They're like, this will be your friend. Okay.
People who know. So let's talk about your pregnancy. You talked about antenatal classes. What have you been doing, and how did you feel about going along to things like that?
Well, we had decided from pretty early on, I think Lewis had probably decided more than me, that we were definitely going to do antenatal classes. We're very lucky where we live. We have good friends immediately around us, our neighbours and the like. But we just wanted to make sure that we had people who were going through the same thing as us at the same time.
Yeah.
So we signed up. I think because we didn't do NCT only because it seemed quite an intense course, as you know, it was sort of like 8 sessions, and it was starting quite early on. And we ended up going for a thing called Bump and Baby,
okay,
which had been recommended as well by our local hospital, our midwives. It's a similar thing, exactly the same thing as NCT, basically. It's just a different private offering. We've only just started it in the last couple of weeks, yes. And I wasn't at all nervous about going in, and I was really keen to sort of like meet other men and women. And there's one woman who's single, who's in the class, and I haven't had a chance to sort of chat to her properly yet. But I don't know what her story is, whether she's, you know, goodness knows, whether she's used donor conception or who knows. But there are a couple of other IVF pregnancies in the group, and that I kind of wanted to establish quite early on. So I just thought, given the fact that I'm pretty much, you know, kind of an expert in IVF now, and I know that there probably would be, like, statistically more people in the group, others in the group at least, who will have also gone through some kind of fertility journey. So I just thought, just lay your cards out on the table straight away. So as soon as I had the opportunity to kind of like talk to people one-on-one about it, I just said, yeah, this is an IVF pregnancy, and quite a lot of IVF as well.
Yeah.
And sure enough, yeah, other people were just like, oh yeah, you know, like me too, or you know, awful things, like people saying that they'd suffered a couple of miscarriages and things like that. So there's definitely kindred spirits in the group, which is great. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to just having that support network, really, for those kind of like, whatever it might be, like the 3 a.m. feeds or something, or when you can't get a crying baby to sleep, or whatever it might be, and then you just want to reach out to someone else who might be going through the same thing.
So
never any doubt that we were going to do it. Although, having said that, good friends locally as well who just didn't bother with any of that, because I think maybe some people feel there's quite a lot of pressure to sort of be in a little cliquey group and pee all the time or whatever it is. But I'm happy to kind of like just go with the flow, and it seems like a really nice bunch of men and women. So hopefully we'll all hang out and our kids will like each other.
Yes. that's a fear. It really is, though. You think, oh my gosh, like, I'm sure I thought this before, but you know, oh, what if I don't like the parent? Well, I suppose the same thing the other way around. What if, like, my child is really good friends with a child and I don't like their parents? Great problem to have, but you know, and it's a silly thing to think, I suppose, but it does cross your mind sometimes.
What if your kid is the one who like scratches your friend's kid or something like that, or learns to slap or kick or something like that before the others, and you'd be like, oh my god, I'm raising a brute.
no brutes, no Vaughan Jones brutes, surely. Rugby players maybe, but not brutes. But no, I think, but I guess the nice thing with those thoughts is that they are, dare I say, kind of quote unquote normal parenting thoughts, aren't they? So it's almost, yeah, like comforting. Well, and it's just amazing to have those, you know, fears being part of your life, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we said from really early on in the pregnancy that it was, as soon as we got through the first 12 weeks, all of the checks that we were and hospital appointments afterwards were initially all with the consultant, the obstetrician, because of our history, it was all going to be consultant led, basically, which I thought was great. And then at the same time, our consultant, who's wonderful, she said to me after a while, she said, you know, everything's looking on track. You know, you're doing beautifully. You're doing really well. Baby looks good. I think you should go back into this being midwife led, because it will give you that feeling of being normal. And I'd never, again, it hadn't really occurred to me that that's something I'd been missing out on for all these years, really. That just that feeling of being normal. Because even if when I did get pregnant before, obviously it ended in miscarriage, and things had been looking pretty dicey from early on. So again, it's very strange feeling like you're not in the sort of the low 2% statistic of people who suffer from infertility or whatever it might be, whatever the stat is. And just to feel like we were just like anyone else going into the maternity unit was so lovely, really, really nice and comforting. I mean, sure enough, I'm kind of like now being seen by both consultant and midwife, you know, it's kind of half and half, but just having that feeling of chatting away to a midwife about your aches and pains and things like that. And yeah, talking about breastfeeding and the things that any other mum or mum-to-be would be worried about, without you being a kind of like weird freak on the side who's also got this kind of like horrible unknown fertility problems or, you know, reproductive failure.
Yes. No, I think that's a really good point, actually, because, and again, like my experience is, and I suspect a lot of people, you know, you want to be consultant led. And we were consultant led from at the beginning because we were expecting twins. So that was, you know, automatically we went, and I was 40. So we, yeah, were automatically consultant led. After we lost one of the twins, then we went back to being midwife led, which I kind of thought was weird. Because I thought, well, surely it's higher risk now, or not higher risk, but, you know, the fact we've lost one, you know, I suppose in your mind you think, oh, well, that means we're going to lose the other one. Actually, it's a lower risk pregnancy because it's a singleton.
Right.
But yeah, you almost want the attention of the consultant. And I think that's because we're so used to seeing consultants and lots of attention, lots of appointments. But yeah, just being looked after by the midwife is normal and it means that your pregnancy is lower risk, is healthy, isn't anything to worry about, hopefully. Yeah.
And they're not worrying about it as well. You feel better knowing, because once you've been through however many kind of like fertility doctors and consultants, you constantly are kind of like trying to guess what they're thinking or what they're, you know, what their plan of action is for you. And so to have that feeling of that, no, like no one's concerned about you, you're just doing well, so just go on and get on with your normal day-to-day life, and you know, obviously stay healthy and don't do anything stupid, but but we trust you mm-hmm. to be able to carry this pregnancy. And that was a really amazing feeling. And I think, you know, we were lucky then as well. I don't know if it was the same for you, Kat, but we have had quite a lot of scans on the NHS. Yeah. Which, you know, friends have since told me that that's all any mum or parents to be like dream of, is just having like those regular scans so you can check everything's okay. And I think, you know, standards would be maybe you just have a 12 and a 20 week and maybe one just before the birth or something. Mm-hmm. Whereas we've kind of gone through, I mean, now we're on every 4 weeks. So we had one at 32 weeks. We'll have another one at 36. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully that should be it. But yes, I think it was from 18 weeks onwards, it's just been 4 weekly scans. And before that, it was almost every week or every other week, because there was some, again, because of the bicornuate uterus, they were worried. No one knows how the uterus is going to expand as the baby grows. So they just wanted to keep a close eye on that, just to check that it was, there was enough room for the baby to grow.
Gosh, no, we paid for a lot of scans, to be honest. Like I think I must count it up, but I've got 16 in my head for some reason that we had 16 scans.
Ow.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of them we did pay for privately. We had our 12-week scan on the NHS. Then we had one at 18 weeks because we were looking potentially at having an amniocentesis, because we couldn't have the Harmony testing because of our twin loss. And so that affects the results. So we couldn't do the Harmony testing. So we had one at 18 weeks, decided not to have the amniocentesis during that scan. That's when we found out that we were having a girl. We're exactly the same as you, just like we've had enough surprises. The baby at the end will be a big surprise. I just want to just tell you. And then we had one at the standard 20. And then we did have one, now I come to think about it, at 32 and 36. So yeah, I suppose we had five. There were a couple of extra right at the very beginning that we had on the NHS.
I managed to, I think, sort of like guilt trip my fertility clinic into giving me an extra scan as well before. Because they said, oh, yeah, everything looks great. We had a sort of 6-week scan, 7-week scan. And then they said, oh, we're going to discharge you and you go into the NHS now. And I was like, no, under no circumstances. I am not ready. you've been a big part of my life and I'm not ready to end this relationship here. So we definitely went back for an 8-week scan. And then I had a scare at 10 weeks. So I went into the early pregnancy unit and had a scan then. And then 12 weeks, I think then it followed to be like 16, 17, 18.
Yeah, anyway, we were averaging one a week, one every 10 days, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that's normal, though. I guess when it's any pregnancy that's been, you know, hard fought for, mm-hmm. you have that level of anxiety, even if you're not normally prone to being anxious. I'm sure that's just perfectly natural.
I agree entirely. I really do. And then I think once the bump starts growing, and then certainly once you start feeling the move, that's when it eased off a little bit.
Yeah. I think another thing, though, is that people had said to me from about 17 weeks, they said, can you feel the baby? Can you feel him move? And I felt flutters. I felt this sort of wriggly kind of sensation, not even a wriggle. It was more like a wave kind of sensation. But I didn't feel a kick as such or any real movement until probably 22 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm so conscious and nervous about the fact that I could potentially, like one can feel things from 17 weeks. Mm. So I suddenly, well, what's wrong here then? What's going on? And so I think that's the other thing about pregnancy, which I wasn't prepared for, is just that you're inundated with information and opinion and experience from other people, and most of it's all totally well-meaning, but it's not always relevant to you, and you have to know what to take on board and what to just instantly dismiss because it's just not helpful.
Yeah,
it took me quite a while to figure that out.
Yeah, no, I think in two ways, really, like you say, like you just get loads and loads of advice. Like my standout piece of advice that I give anyone about everything, actually, is like listen to people's advice, but take on only the bits that you're interested in, you know, and don't worry about the rest. Like, and that is just that's my life advice for everyone. So take it or leave it. But comparison, you know, it's the same for everything, isn't it? And it is. And when you have a little one, then you're in classes and you're comparing, and you're thinking, oh, is mine doing what that one's doing? How old are they? You know, that, and it's that can become quite intense. I'm not an anxious person necessarily, but I did, you know, I have found that to be quite intense. And it's, you have that at the pregnancy. I started feeling Ren, I think it was about 18 weeks but I know that people had felt at 16 weeks. And I was like, And then if you've got an anterior placenta, I think then you have even less feeling, don't you? So that must be really difficult.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think I with the whole comparison thing, I thought that was just something that was just confined to the trying years, to take a phrase for someone. I didn't realise that there was a sort of pregnancy comparison thing. So people comparing the size of you, like your bump sizes, and not just other people, you do it, as I was doing it as well. Mm-hmm. It's just non-stop, and you're constantly trying to work out if it's normal or not, or if you're normal. You know, am I the right size? Am I the right shape? Am I feeling enough movement? And then when the midwives or doctors turn around to you and say, like, what's the pattern of your baby's kicks? And I'd be like, well, I don't know. I haven't really thought of it as a pattern. I mean, he's basically really active whenever I'm not. So that's maybe not a great sign. I don't know. I just suddenly thought, gosh, am I supposed to be rushing into hospital every kind of 5 minutes or every day, going, oh, well, I haven't felt a kick in the last couple of hours? Because I just wasn't monitoring it that carefully. And it wasn't that I was being lazy or naive, I don't think, or anything like that about the pregnancy, but I just was just trying to get on with being me and just and getting on with, like, this is now my normal. But yeah, just the thought that, oh, well, you know, if the baby hasn't kicked for a while, or all those apps that you can get where you can monitor, you can put in the number of kicks, and I was like, well, how do you define a kick?
Yeah, it's so hard. And I think the good thing is, if I can get my words out, if it feels normal to you, you know, and I guess you had a fairly relaxed attitude towards it, which is really good. But then you also don't want to be too relaxed, do you? So it's like, yeah. But, you know, if you're feeling him enough, you'd probably notice if you stop feeling him, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. But then, you know, when it's in those early weeks of feeling kicks, so second trimester-y stuff, that you're suddenly feeling stuff and you're feeling enough, you're sure of it, but then you suddenly think, oh my god, maybe it's not quite enough. And there's all these signs all over the maternity ward saying, if you don't feel this for a couple of hours, that is not normal. You need to come and see us. And it's all this like scare tactics everywhere, which I'm sure it's all for, you know, it will all be for a very good reason, because there are obviously problems that occur with some people.
Mm.
But I mean, I was quite proud of myself, thinking, well done you for not overreacting at every turn, and for sticking to all of your appointment times rather than rushing into the hospital every day or every other day or anything like that. But there's still time. Will change in the next couple of weeks.
And if it does, as long as, you know, every time, you know, if you need to check, you need to check. That's totally, why wouldn't you? This is like one of the most important things that's ever happened in our lives, you know, so why wouldn't we go and check and make sure everything was all right? I don't think that's, like, it's great to not have that constant anxiety and worry about it. But if you are, then just go and appease that by having CTG check for sure.
Yeah, I feel like they are really closely monitoring me, which is great. So, you know, I had this blood pressure scare the other day, and then day, and I'm back in next week just to sort of keep an eye on it, and then seeing the consultant after that. And, you know, so I feel like I'm getting enough care from the outside world rather that sort of satisfies my paranoia enough. Yeah.
That's good. And so with the blood pressure, that's just something you're monitoring. Are they concerned about anything in particular? Or
well, I didn't know about any of this, but apparently high blood pressure and dizziness and blurred vision, things like that, can be a sign of preeclampsia, mm-hmm. Which I guess you're more prone to if you're older as well. And perhaps if there's a family history. And I only just found out that my mum actually, she didn't have preeclampsia, thank goodness, but she was admitted to hospital with both my sister and me when she was pregnant, again for high blood pressure.
Right.
So, and that was obviously back in the late 70s, 80s. So, their concern was that my blood pressure, having always been like very good and low and normal, was suddenly raised just a couple of days ago, and they did it a couple of times and it was still too high. So I think they just keep a very close eye on you. I've just looked up what preeclampsia is, and it's obviously just, it can be very, very serious. A pregnancy disorder. It can affect your kidneys, your liver, function, all sorts of things, and be very dangerous for you and for the baby. So I'm pleased that they're taking it very seriously. But yeah. Fortunately, said at the beginning, I had this acupuncture session yesterday specifically to try and lower it, and whether it's to do with that or not, who knows, but it has now come down, so now it's just my job to kind of try and keep it down. And I think there are ways of treating high blood pressure as well, just aspirin and all sorts of various medications as well that they can give you. Yeah. But fortunately I don't have to take it now because it's sorted itself out temporarily, at least.
Brilliant. Right. Well, I'm going to ask you one other thing and then I'm going to let you go because it's getting late and I think both of us could do with going. But I know you can't speak for him, but how's Lewis?
He's really well. He's actually just got home from work, so I think he's downstairs somewhere. He's reading all the books now, and he started to get excited. It's interesting to me that he still can't say my son or right. I'm going to be a dad or anything like that. Not because of any overly sentimental reason. I think he's very logical and practical about things in life. And he doesn't want to jump ahead until it's real. And so I think that will be the case right up until D-Day. But he's very excited, and he has been an absolute hero in getting the house, getting the house ready, getting the nursery ready. And we're nearly there at the moment now, a couple of weeks to go. But yeah, we are nearly there. And he's been very particular about wanting to, I don't know, just change every corner of the house. Has been changed. Therefore, creative eye cast over it. And that's all been down to him. So I think that's his way of preparing himself and preparing us for this massive life change.
Wow. Gosh. Oh, it's so, I can almost picture you both. I really can, honestly, just when he arrives. And yeah, I just can't wait to hear that news. I really can't. It's going to be so exciting.
Yeah, I will send you a picture as soon as he's out. Or maybe once he's been tidied up a bit, but
okay. I can take that. I can wait that long. Oh, well, all right then. Well, thank you so much, Hannah. I really appreciate you taking time out this evening to have a chat with us.
And my pleasure.
It's just so fab because I know that you've spoken on a few podcasts previously on Alice's and The Big Brain Negative. And it's just, I just love that now you're here on this one. That's just the best news ever.
It's a really nice curve, actually, isn't it, to do? Because I did Big Fat Negative whenever it was, but maybe a year or so ago. And then I did Alice's very early on in the pregnancy. And then now doing yours at the very end of the pregnancy. So, yeah, it's nice to kind of like have ticked all the boxes along the way.
Exactly. We are the boxes, apparently. I love that. And it would just be really nice, I think, for people who have followed your story, you know, and I suspect that people will be listening to this who are pregnant and, you know, want to listen to kind of all of the different experiences and things. And I reckon that there'll be people who want to, you know, who are following your particular story and will want to hear, whether they're pregnant or not, will just want to hear how you're getting on and everything, which is just amazing.
Yeah, because I think it's difficult to know how much to share, you know, what could potentially be a trigger for some people in whatever stage they're at. So I've kind of ummed and ahed over a lot of Instagram posts and things over the last 9 months, just not really knowing how much is appropriate and all the rest of it. And, but, you know, at the same time, I've had messages from people saying, please keep us updated. Please let us know how you're doing. I think it's important just to show that, you know, like I've loved being pregnant. I'm so thrilled that I'm here in the position I'm in, but it is important to say that it's difficult. And it's not, you're not just jumping around gleeful for the whole time, because it's really scary and unknown and painful at times, really uncomfortable. And just because you've gone through infertility or a long journey with IVF, whatever it might be, doesn't mean that you have to be smiley every day. Mm. And it's okay to complain a bit. I mean, Lewis would say I complain too much, but it's okay to complain a bit. And I hope that anyone else who's pregnant and listening to this will know that whatever they're going through, whether they're being sick every day or whether they're feeling absolutely fine and whatever it might be, that it's there. Everyone's journey is slightly different. Everyone's kind of experience is going to be slightly different, but everything's okay at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're allowed to have the good and the bad that comes with it, aren't you? And complain and be joyous. And, you know, the Instagram thing is a really interesting point, that it can be difficult. And I still feel it a bit now with Ren. You know, how much do I put on there? It kind of solves itself a little bit because I just haven't got the time to Instagram as much at the moment. Yeah. So therefore, you know, there aren't that many pictures of her particularly. But it is, and it's something that people talk to me about, you know, how much should I, how much shouldn't I? I started my account because it was, you know, about my infertility and about my treatment, and now I am pregnant, or now I've got a little one, I don't know how much. And, you know, it's each to their own, really, and don't be offended if people unfollow you, but you've got to do what's right for you, you know?
Yeah, I think lots of people have like multiple accounts as well, which I've never really considered doing, like having one for work and one for IVF or whatever. So I just have one Instagram account, and it's the same, you know, Twitter the same handle as my Twitter account, for example, which is I predominantly use for work-related stuff. But I think it's just, you know, when you go through any kind of fertility struggle, you feel like you become so one-dimensional anyway, because that is the sole focus of your life for however long. And I think it's, for me, it's just really important just to be like, no, I am H. Vaughan Jones. With all these various facets and, you know, things going on around me. So nowadays on Instagram, I could post about a friend, I could post about work, I could post about infertility, a pregnancy, all sorts of different things. And hopefully there's enough of a balance there that people know that you know, they could get anything really. It could be all sorts of all of the various things going on in my life, and whatever happens to be pertinent to that day, I'll post something about it, or to that week. I hope that anyone who follows me knows that they could get Brexit just as much as they could get.
that might make them hit the hot unfollow button, I'm afraid.
Our way of losing followers, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh dear. Oh well, on that merry note. I'm going to love you and leave you to a kind of sweet dreams, with huge thanks for coming and having a chat with me.
And thank you so much as well, from all of us as well, to you for doing this podcast, and for all the Cat and Alice work that you do as well. I just think it's absolutely brilliant, and you're blazing a trail for people in the future to not find it quite so much of a struggle, because they'll have more information and support. So well done. Oh,
thank you. Well, like, yeah, I feel a bit, I'm in good company from people like you and many others who are doing equally as fantastic work. So, you know, I think we all help and inspire and support each other, which is just, you know, for a place that none of us wanted to be, it's actually quite incredible, isn't it? So that's
yeah,
super.
Yeah. And my little 6 months behind Ren.
Your little boy will be 6 months behind, yes. Oh my goodness. Oh, I can't believe she's going to be 6 months. She's just turned 5 months, yeah. So what date are you due, remind me?
Well, quite late December. 23rd.
23rd, yes.
But I think it's going to come a couple of weeks before.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Like a planned arrival a couple of weeks beforehand.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, I can't wait to receive that picture. I'm so excited. Right, I am going to go this time. I will speak to you soon, my lovely. Take care.
Lots of love.
Bye-bye. Bye.